Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Liberty Advisor Podcast. This is Tim Pichot here. It is Friday the 13th. That is April 13th. And there's been a lot of stuff going on since the last time we've done a podcast. And as a matter of fact, there's so much stuff that's going on. There is no way that we can cover all of this. And I'm not even going to try to cover this. And really what I want to focus on today is the war in Syria. I've had a lot of people ask me, you know, what my thoughts are, if they think this is real, if it's not real. And really, you know, so today what I want to do is give my thoughts. And I think the first thing I want to start with is a Washington Post. Yeah, the fake news, Washington Post. An article they had on April 4th. This is only, you know, what is this? Today, yeah, so I mean, we're talking about a little over a week ago. And the article reads, "In his haste to withdraw from Syria, Trump stands alone. The Pentagon, the State Department, and CIA are all deeply concerned about potential ramifications if the U.S. leaves behind a power vacuum in Syria, and as are Israel, Arab leaders and other nations in the U.S.-led coalition that has fought IS in Iraq and Syria since 2014. Well, isn't that cute that the State Department and CIA are all deeply concerned about the ramifications of the U.S. pulling out? So here we have a situation where the president is talking about pulling out of Syria. You've got Putin talking about pulling out of Syria. You've got Putin wanting to meet with Trump sometime in March. And a lot of it was to talk about what could be a false flag event because they had caught the supposedly, quote unquote, good guys. They had caught them actually manufacturing these chemical weapons. And so part of this was, Putin, I think, wanted to get ahead of the game and to be able to say, hey, listen, there's a false flag attack that's going to be coming. Because it is very, very convenient that you've got Putin talking about pulling out, you've got Trump talking about pulling out. And right as they're pulling out and you've got the CIA and State Department worried about the big power vacuum that this is going to create. And now all of a sudden you've got the perfect pretext to keep everybody in. And then you've got Donald Trump on Twitter saying, "Many dead, including women and children, in mindless chemical attacks in Syria. The area of atrocity is in lockdown and encircled by Syrian army, making it completely inaccessible to the outside world. President Putin, Russia, and Iran are responsible for backing Anwar Assad. Big price, dot, dot, dot." So, I mean, it's just very convenient. I mean, when I'm trying to look at it, like, who has the motive? So if you're Bashar al-Assad, and not saying that he's some great guy, but why would you, at a moment that you've got two nuclear powers saying that they're going to be pulling out of your country, why would you then go and chlorine gas attack your own people? It seems like it would make no sense. But what you really have to do is you have to back this up to the year before, when the year, it was almost exactly a year before, there's a similar attack that, as U.S. is Taiwan pulling out, and all of a sudden there's another attack that's going to keep us there. So, you've taken a look at some of the other ones that, going back to, I think 2012, 2013 is when they had that initial red line that was crossed. And every single time what has eventually come out in the media and in the papers, eventually through the alternative media, has been that these attacks were carried out by the same groups that the U.S. were funding. They were carried out by Al-Nusra Front. They were carried out by the Free Syrian Army, who basically have all been proven to be Al-Qaeda terrorist cells. These are the same people that John McCain was funding, the same people that John McCain was saying, these are the great moderates. These are great guys. I can personally vouch for them. And, this is stuff that used to get me really, really mad. I used to get, use all sorts of colorful language. But, at this point, I'm just completely over this. It's really gratifying to see that now more and more Americans and people all around the world are starting to wake up to this. They're starting to wake up to fake news. They're starting to wake up to the propaganda. Now, this following clip, and this is very, very rare when I say Hillary Clinton said it best, but without further ado.
"We are in an information war, and we are losing that war. I'll be very blunt in my assessment."
Then she goes on to say that basically the private media can't be alone to be able to fill that gap, and we need to have the government obviously come in to be able to help propagandize people.
"And unfortunately, we are paying a big price for it. And our private media cannot fill that gap. In fact, our private media, particularly cultural programming, often works at counter purposes to what we truly are as Americans and what our values are. I remember having an...
And I mean, that's why they're so scared of Facebook. That's why, you know, they're censoring people like me. They're censoring people like James Corbett. They're censoring people, basically, you know, all the, you know, Stefan Molyneux of the world, the Mike Cernoviches, the Alex Jones, you know, anybody, you know, right of Mao is being censored big time on social media. I shared this Alex Jones clip about how he thought the Syrian war propaganda was all, you know, kind of staged propaganda, and that only reached 62 people. I mean, not like I'm some big swinging you know what over here, but I've got close to 33,000 people following me, and it reached 62 people. So I mean, you know when you've got something getting oppressed that much, that you are definitely over the target at that point. And because, you know, the State Department is losing the information war. You've got a lot of people like me, you guys who are listening to me, you know, sharing this stuff, sharing this information, you know, with your friends and family. You know, we are the ones who are helping take this country back. And the powers that be are definitely afraid of this. Now, this also reminds me of, William Randolph Hearst, who was the one that said, "You furnish the pictures and I'll furnish the war." So the current way of doing that right now, just so people know, William Randolph Hearst is pretty much the godfather of what you'd call yellow journalism. Not the godfather of propaganda, but the godfather of yellow journalism. Now, the war that he was trying to start was the Spanish-American War, where, again, I'm not an expert in this. It's something that at one point I knew quite a bit about. But, you know, you had the USS Maine that was exploded in the Havana Harbor, which killed 274 people. But from that, I mean, it was generally believed that that ship was loaded up with explosives, and then they basically set off the explosives as a false flag to have the pretext to enter that war. Now today, who are, you know, the ones providing all the information today would be, you know, the so-called white helmets. But one thing the media really never talks about are who are the white helmets. Now one of the best I think authorities on this subject is going to be James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. So I mean, I don't want to, you know, what I would do is I'll just link this in the show notes because I don't need to really go over too much what he's saying. But here, let's take a little clip of this.
In November 2017, journalist Vanessa Beely gave a groundbreaking presentation to the Swiss Press Club in Geneva on the so-called Syria Civil Defense, better known as the White Helmets, which bills itself as an impartial group of volunteer search and rescue workers working to save lives and strengthen communities in Syria. In her presentation, Beely demonstrated the connections between this supposedly neutral organization, recognized terrorist groups operating in Syria, and the UK government.
"During my time working in East Aleppo, it was clear that the councils were working hand in hand with Nusra Front. Their centers in each district were always next door to Nusra Front headquarters and White Helmet centers, i.e., they always formed an integrated complex."
Less than 3 weeks later, The Guardian released a report painting all skeptics of the White Helmets, including Beely and other anti-imperialist activists, as proponents of a Russian propaganda campaign directed by the Kremlin.
Now, in 2017, it's very fitting that the White Helmets would actually receive an Oscar. So they had a documentary that was produced, and so the leader of the White Helmets was set to come to America, although he wasn't allowed to enter America because the State Department deemed him as a terrorist. So here we've got a U.S. State Department representative, April 2016, when they won the Oscars for that. So let's just take a listen to this. Again, we're at CorbettReport.com.
We'll certainly act on that.
"I'm saying it just strikes me as a bit odd that you're saying that this group is wonderful and does such a great job and you're commending them for their heroism, and yet you're doing this just 10 days after the leader of this group, who was supposed to be, you know, who got his visa revoked and wasn't allowed to travel here."
"Well, he's one individual in the group."
"But the leader of the group."
"And any individual, again, I'm broadening my language here for specific reasons, but any individual in any group suspected of ties or relations with extremist groups, or that we had believed to be a security threat to the United States, we would act accordingly. But that does not, by extension, mean we condemn or would cut off ties to the group for which that individual works for."
So how is this possible? How could the leader of such a valiant team of crusading do-gooders himself be denied a visa to enter the United States as a potential security threat with ties to terrorists? The multi-million-dollar PR campaign that surrounds the White Helmets, after all, portrays the group as being pure as the driven snow.
Now, another person you definitely want to make yourself familiar with is Mehram Sulsi. That's a S-U-S-L-I, first name Mehram, M-A-R-A-M. She's better known as Syrian Girl. She's somebody who I've been paying attention to for quite a while. I mean, I want to say probably going back to like, I don't know, probably like 2011, 2012. She made several appearances on Alex Jones where I first saw her. And just sort of some background on her, that her family, I believe, was actually kicked out of Syria by Assad's father or grandfather. And if there's anyone who ever has like an axe to grind, so her family was, you know, like a ruling party over there. So let's say, you know, I don't want to say like she's, you know, Hillary Clinton and, you know, it was, you know, the Bush family that kicked her out. But, you know, over the politics over there, it was something similar. So if there's ever anyone that had an axe to grind, well, I guess, you know, there's really not too much difference between the Bushes and Clinton, seeing as how they, you know, vacation with one another. But you guys get the point. You know, so if there's ever anyone that has an axe to grind, you know, so it's sort of like, you know, the Boston Red Sox, you know, defending the Yankees. I mean, these are people that hate each other. But what she hated even more was the fact that it was the U.S. government was the one that was funding al-Qaeda, the U.S. government that was funding the Free Syrian Army, guys like John McCain and Hillary Clinton. And so, I mean, all this stuff has such a history. I mean, you know, I'm not going to get into the whole Libya, you know, fiasco, but a lot of those weapons were then shipped over into Turkey. So they went from Libya into Turkey, then smuggled into Syria to then give to forces that were actually sympathetic to basically terrorism, sympathetic to al-Qaeda, you know, directly affiliated with al-Qaeda. You know, the people that we were funding in Libya, you know, some of them even went by the name, like, we're the Bin Laden unit or the Bin Laden group. I guess the Bin Laden group is a construction company that actually also builds most of the U.S. bases until recently, even after 9/11. But, you know, that's a whole nother story that I just, you know, just happened to be on top of my head that I didn't mean to talk about. But anyways, this is straight from Syrian Girl. And here's an interview that she did on, I believe it was like a UK show.
The Islamic State.
The fact is, it is the American and NATO government and Israel that are funding these al-Qaeda terrorists and Muslim Brotherhood extremists. And that is the point that everybody here is missing.
Not afraid to speak her mind, Mehram's controversial videos have clocked up more than 2.5 million views on YouTube from US strikes.
What we really need is for the money flow and the training to stop. And what this Obama's mission now, it's just going to strengthen ISIS. And this could actually escalate as it did last year with some kind of a World War III scenario where Iran and Israel and Russia gets involved.
To Ebola?
Is Ebola a biological?
All right, and again, I don't expect anyone to just, you know, believe me, because, you know, if this is the first time you've ever heard me, you know, don't do your own research. You know, go seek out, you know, Mehram Sulsi, aka Syrian Girl, watch interviews she did, you know, going back before all this stuff kicked up. I remember, maybe it was even earlier, but I mean, from memory, I want to say 2011, 2012 time frame, that she was talking about what the game plan in Syria would be by the globalists before it even happened, before this was even like out there in the media. And so this is somebody that I found to be incredible source of knowledge on this subject, you know, certainly a lot more than what you're going to experience in the fake news. You know, I would also encourage you to watch the Corbett Report, where they get into, you know, these issues on whether it's the white helmets or whether it's on, you know, he's got stuff going back years and years and years on all these subjects. So, you know, don't take my word, don't take their word, certainly don't take the fake news word for this. But, you know, I'm really trying to think, you know, where the, you know, 4D, 5D, 6D chess that Trump is trying to play on this, because, you know, I could, you know, at a certain level, Machiavellian level, I could sort of understand the one that was 40, that, you know, when Trump bombed them, I don't want to say we, I didn't do it, when Trump bombed them 40, 50 days into his presidency, you know, I actually had a life-size cutout of Trump that my wife got me for my birthday, and, you know, that went in the corner, and actually I've since then donated it to the Trump Report on Freedom's Phoenix. So we've got the Declare Your Independence show that, you know, they've been doing the Trump Report ever since basically week one when he walked down the elevator. So, you know, they're going on 3 years right now with Dr. Frank Tamburi and Ernest Hancock. You know, if you go to freedoms with an S, phoenix.com, you know, great source of knowledge on all this stuff as well. But again, don't take any of our words for this. Do your own research. And what I'm really trying to figure out is what Trump has to gain by this. And again, I see what went on for, you know, day 40 into the presidency-ish. And what was going on then is, you know, Trump being accused of being a puppet of Putin. And so this was a way to, you know, hey, you know, you know, wave your big stick around and be able to, you know, do some bombs in the airfield that doesn't really do anything, and, you know, not too many deaths. I think there's only one or two casualties from that. And meanwhile, you know, you get to prove that you're not a puppet. Well, anyways, you know, the media doesn't care that, you know, you're proving that you're not a puppet, because they're still going to call you a puppet anyways. And I was not happy with that. You know, I thought that could have possibly cost him the election, even 40 days in. And a lot of people thought that I was crazy for that. And what my rationale was, you know, it doesn't really matter what the you know, average Trump voter out there thinks. It only matters what people in swing states think, you know, who may have voted for him. And if you get only maybe, let's say, 1% of people that were disaffected by this move, and you've got all these states where, you know, he won by 5,000 votes or 12,000 votes or 50,000 votes or, you know, basically a small number of votes, if you only disenfranchise a small amount of people, then that could throw the election right there. And this is something that I was pointed out, you know, 40 days into it, caught a lot of flack for that. And now we're seeing, you know, I had thought that, you know, the Republicans were going to get their butts handed to them in the midterms. And that looks to be exactly what's going to happen. You know, certainly, you know, why am I going to go out and, you know, spend all this effort and energy trying to elect Republicans when they're proposing budgets and passing budgets that are larger than what the Democrats are passing? Why am I going to go bust my butt to go vote for them when they're actually going and, you know, suspending the debt ceiling? So, you know, they were, you know, bitching about Obama raising the debt ceiling, and then they go and then completely suspend it. And how that works is what they do is when they eventually, you know, reenact it. I don't know the exact time frame on this. I think it's like a year and a half from now, or maybe a year from now, that then like all the debt we've racked up at that point will then just kind of get tacked on, and we'll have a new argument over where the debt ceiling will be. So, you know, from a philosophical standpoint is, you know, imagine that if this was, you know, Obama trying to pull this off, you know, these Republicans would have bitched and, you know, threw a fit, because it's all theater. You know, they want their warfare. The Democrats want their welfare. They want to, you know, both tear up each other. And at least when Republicans are in, you know, the media is, you know, all over them, over everything. But, you know, it's obviously not a fair portrayal of what they're doing. You know, obviously Trump is getting railroaded seven ways to Sunday, as Chuck Schumer, you know, pointed out in an interview. You know, way back, I think before he was even, inaugurated, there was an interview of Schumer saying that. Let's go find that clip.
Intelligence community. You take on the intelligence community, they have six ways from Sunday of getting back at you. So even for a practical, supposedly hard-nosed businessman, he's being really dumb.
I mean, all I can really say to that is, wow. I mean, Chuck Schumer at that point, I mean, sounds like a mob boss. And at the same time, you've got, you know, James Comey out there running around saying that, you know, Trump, you know, sounds like a mob boss coming to him. So, you know, if anything, you know, the power elite out there, they're in absolute panic mode. But at the same time, I see Trump playing right into their hands. And I'm really not sure, you know, what he has to deal from this. I mean, is he trying to distract the public like Bill Clinton did, you know, as they were, you know, talking about his BJ that he then goes and bombs, you know, Yugoslavia and Kosovo for no apparent reason? I mean, I was in probably elementary school when that was going down. No pun intended with going down comment there. But, you know, it's really, you know, I also see comments where he's trying to, you know, re-enter talks with the TPP. And for me, it's just like, you know, he's really going sideways these past few weeks, you know, whether it's, you know, some of the tariffs, whether it's, you know, now bombing Syria, whether it's, you know, TPP, you know, this stuff is going to be very, very hard sell for, you know, the libertarians and constitutionalists and for, you know, some of the independents out there to really vote for him again. You know, obviously he's way better than, you know, the alternative, obviously way better than, you know, Hillary Clinton. I think that goes without saying. But, you know, at this point, you know, really from a financial standpoint, I really see everything that's going to happen is really already baked into the cake. And, you know, I think that Trump has really taken it hook, line, and sinker. And I think he's trying to defeat ISIS, unlike his predecessor. I think he's trying to do good things for the economy. But ultimately, if this whole entire economy is predicated on debt, and really, you know, Obama had to take the debt, let's call it from 10 to 20. I think it was really from like 9 to 18 or something like that, or 9 to 19.2 or something like that. But anyways, it doesn't matter. Let's call it from 10 to 20. You know, is Trump going to have to take it from 20 to 40? Well, at the rate that the government debt has been going up, that is actually in line to happen. You know, if he wins another term, you know, here I am talking about, you know, if he doesn't, but, you know, certainly, you know, if the Democrats win in 2020, you know, they're not going to curtail spending any. And, you know, really, you know, I've laid this out, you know, a few times already, but the optics on this are so obvious. I mean, the optics basically say that, you know, we had Bill Clinton coming in here in, you know, in the 90s, and he left a surplus. And again, I have an entire podcast on this where, you know, I dispel all of that. Or actually, you know, it was a video, and, you know, I had a sore throat that day, and the audio, it was before I really knew what I was doing. So, you know, the audio quality is not the best, but the information on it, you know, even though I made it, so I'm obviously biased on this, I think it was absolutely fantastic. I'll try to link that in the show notes as well. But again, you know, there are a lot of caveats to this whole thing of, you know, Obama or Clinton ran a, you know, this huge surplus, because if you back out Social Security payments, he actually didn't. That's why the debt still went up. And then he raided Social Security to pay for a lot of things. Then, you know, you had the baby boomers who were born in 1946. And then people spend the most amount of money in their lifetime at age 46. So if you add 1946 plus 46, you get 1992. So baby boomers are ending their peak spending years. Then you've got, you know, and earning years. Then you also have, you know, the backdrop of the technology boom. So, you know, he was dealt, you know, basically, you know, four aces and thinks he's a great, you know, or dealt, you know, a royal flush and trying to think that he's a great poker player. And then you've also got, you know, the fact that it was his people in there in the Treasury who then got rid of the Glass-Steagall Act and allowed the banks to have, you know, all this other stuff that, you know, I can go on and on and on for. You know, so the narrative is, you know, we're Democrat in there, things are great. Then George W. Bush effed everything up. Then Obama had to, you know, come in, clean up the mess. So he gets a free pass to double the debt, even though he had, you know, basically put everything on a 0% credit card. And then we hand it off to a Republican. And then the Republican, all of a sudden, he gets in there and starts ballooning up the debt to trillion-dollar deficits. And this is a narrative that is, you know, I can see this just like a mile away from, like, you know, like I'm on like a satellite just looking down from Earth, knowing exactly what the playbook is going to be. And so the Republicans going to be able to run on, you know, hey, we cut government spending. No, they're not going to be able to do that. Like, yeah, you raise tax. Yeah, you cut taxes, which, you know, I'm all for, you know, let's cut them down to zero. But you got to have the balls to then go in and actually cut government spending as well. And actually, for the first half of this fiscal year, and for those of you listening to me, I am streaming this, actually not streaming, I'm recording my screen as well. So, you know, I had the Corbett Report up earlier. I had Syrian Girl up there now. I had Washington Post, fake news outlet over there. Now I'm looking at The Hill, and the title reads, deficit near $600 billion in first half of 2018. I think it was like, yeah, it was 598. So, you know, basically a rounding error to get up to that. And so, I mean, if you annualize it out, that's $1.2 trillion in a supposed, you know, boom time. And so, you know, right now it takes about $6 of debt to increase the GDP by $1. And so I've had people commenting on my Facebook page, you know, it takes money to make money and all this other stuff. Yeah, I know that. And yeah, Donald Trump knows that. But, you know, and yeah, he is in a rock and a hard place that, you know, he's gonna get blamed no matter what. But, you know, the optics, it's all about the optics. And the optics are, right now, you elect a Republican in there, then they explode the budget because they, you know, gave out tax cuts to the rich. And I'm doing this in air quotes. And obviously, you know, I'm for tax cuts, but I'm also for cutting government spending as well. And seeing the government spending go up, you know, is not something that I want to, you know, stake my claim on. And the bigger issue from a financial standpoint is that if you have, you know, a situation where you've got, you know, let's call it $1 trillion of new bonds that the Treasury has to sell, at the same time you have, you know, $1 trillion that the Federal Reserve is trying to roll off their balance sheet, well, then who the hell is going to buy that $2 trillion worth of bonds? I mean, is the American public going to be trying to buy that $2 trillion worth of bonds? Oh, no, wait, we usually rely on the Federal Reserve to buy them, but they said they're not buying them anymore. So that means we need to then farm it out to the Chinese. Oh, wait, basically, we're trying to give a big FU middle finger to the Chinese. So, you know, who do we expect to buy these bonds? So this is setting up the perfect storm right now where you're going to have interest rates going up. So when interest rates go up, it's going to explode the interest on the debt. Then the Fed's going to have to actually reverse course on their quantitative tightening program right now, or selling the bonds. They're going to have to actually start buying the bonds again, which, you know, because what's going to happen is you're going to see such pressure from the interest rates, and then that's going to then bleed over into the stock market, is what my guess is on this. And again, I'm not giving financial advice right now. You know, everyone's got their own situation. You know, you should ask your own advisor. If you don't have an advisor, if your advisor doesn't know about this stuff, then please, you know, contact us at thelibertyadvisor.com. You can email me personally at tim@thelibertyadvisor.com. Really, the next, you know, I imagine next week I'll be up and running. It might even be today. Cause sort of hope it's not today, because I think Friday the 13th is not the best omen to get started on. But anyways, you know, we've got different strategies to help, you know, sort of mitigate against this. We've got protected growth strategies where we know, you know, let's say your max downside could be 5%, but you know, you're going to get 95% of the upside on it. Because what everybody wants is they want to participate in the market while it's going up, and they want to avoid the major downturns. So, you know, not to have a big sales job on this, but if you go to sequenceofreturnrisk.com, and again, this is actually at the libertyadvisor.com at the bottom of the page, has a link to sequenceofreturnrisk.com, and it lays out that, you know, if you are close to retirement, or really doesn't, it doesn't matter what your average return is in retirement. Really, it only matters what the first few years are, first few years before you retire and first few years afterwards, and particularly the first few years you retire. Because if you retire into a 2007 environment and you're down 40% in year one, and you've got to take out, you know, what, and you were planning on taking out 4% to supplement your lifestyle, now you've got to take out 8 in order to, let's say you need $50,000 a year, and you know, you had $1,000,000 and you're taking out 5%, and now all of a sudden your portfolio cuts in half, and now you've got to take out 10, which is the same 50,000, you know, you're never going to be back on an even playing field. And I go over all the math in here and how it works. It's like a 2-3 minute video. Then if you want to sign up for more, you've got the full, you know, 17-20 minute video that goes and expunges on this information in greater detail. But the broader point of what I'm trying to get at is, you know, I see this setting up this, you know, perfect storm where the interest rates are going up, which then is going to cause the stock market to go down. And then all of a sudden now we can't afford to pay the interest on the debt, or, you know, it becomes a big problem. So then we're going to have to actually have the Federal Reserve go and start buying bonds again, which then all of a sudden is going to lead to a huge decrease in the dollar. I mean, because in 2008, when all this stuff was going down, the dollar actually rose. And the dollar is actually sinking quite a bit. You know, it's sunk, you know, quite a bit since Trump took office. And let me try to see if I can pull up those numbers right now. All right, so I'm on the marketwatch.com website. And yeah, January 2017, the dollar index was just under 103. It was like 102.95. And today it's sitting just under 90. So, you know, over a 10% move in the dollar. And that's on the backdrops of, you know, 6 rate hikes since Trump was since he had won the election. So, you know, it's just absolutely crazy right now that you've got the dollar going down in the same backdrop as interest rates going up, which, with interest rates going up, should be good news for the dollar. And interest rates going up should also be bad news for gold. But we've seen gold actually holding steady and actually going up a little bit. So, you know, if, you know, because always the common knowledge is, you know, if you get higher interest rates, and higher interest rates are going to attract more dollars, and then now it means that gold is actually less value. I don't believe that. I'm just saying that that's what the average economist, you know, the Paul Krugmans of the world that Trump listed as his number one source of fake news. And actually, the crazy thing is, when I, you know, a lot of you know that I came out with a fake news list November 16th, potentially being the first person to actually throw that term back onto the media. It went viral. I listed one person by name. That one person was Paul Krugman. And then Paul Krugman, like 15 months later, won Trump's fake news award. And that was the only person that I listed by name on there. So just a little crazy little aside on there that, yeah, I'm over the target on a lot of this stuff. But, you know, what this has is, you know, major implications if you're close to retirement. And so if you are working with an advisor who poo-poos this stuff, who has no idea what I'm talking about, which is most of them that are out there, you know, do yourself a favor, you know, talk with somebody like us that knows. You know, we've got a, you know, a team of people that, you know, I'm working with over here that can help you out. So go to thelibertyadvisor.com or email me personally at tim@thelibertyadvisor.com. Some of you might be thinking, okay, you're just, you know, showing for yourself. You know, yes, you know, I do have to feed my family, but yes, I am a person that's very principled, person that, you know, is not just going to always go with the flow to, you know, benefit myself. You know, I have taken, you know, a dramatic move to actually have to, in order to give a speech down in Acapulco, I had to, at the TV Investment Summit, I had to quit my job because they wouldn't allow me to talk about crypto. And, you know, I'm, you know, a principled person, you know, that move right there, you know, probably cost me about $40,000, you know, and caused a lot of strife. But, you know, I'm somebody that's not going to be bought and paid for. I'm always have my client's best interest at stake, and we should be ready to roll sometime in the next week. And so it's my goal to, you know, take all this knowledge and be able to help out my clients with this and help out future clients with this. And really, if, even if you're not a client, you can listen to this information and get a lot of good value out of this, because, you know, it's very clear what I see is coming. And you know, and I think, you know, cryptos could be one way to help play this. You know, getting, you know, gold stocks could be another, holding on to physical gold and silver could be another. But again, don't just go willy-nilly, don't go all in on this stuff. A lot of it is very volatile. And if you're close to retirement, you need to have a strategy to be able to pull out income. need to have a strategy where, you know, what if the market does go down 30%? Have you stress tested your portfolio? Have you stress tested your retirement? You know, how is that going to work? But again, you know, it's lunchtime over here. You know, wanted to get something out on Syria. You know, I guess the cliff notes is, you know, the first three times there was chemical attacks, every single time eventually it came out that it was the U.S. funded forces. You've got the white helmets that are just a U.S. propaganda arm. And then you've got, you know, the people that have the motive to keep us in there are the same deep state that's trying to screw the president. So why wouldn't the same deep state that's, you know, scared of us pulling out, scared of all their friends not getting, you know, all the military contracts, you know, scared of all the different oil pipelines, you know, scared of, you know, like people like Russia, who actually did have a presence in Syria as they were at, you know, it was like one of their only warm water ports. They were actually invited there. So, you know, you've got all these different, you look at the motive. The motive is that, you know, the people that have the most to, you know, gain from this is the U.S. military industrial complex, is, you know, NATO, it's, you know, MI5, England, Israel. And who it's not right now is President Trump. Maybe he's being suckered into this because he's got John Bolton in there. He's got Gina Haspel over at, you know, the CIA now. He's got Pompeo, the former CIA director, who's actually seeming like he's the least hawkish out of the group because he's been to war before. But, you know, it's not setting up well. I think Trump's going to have a very, very hard time winning election in 2020 if he's, you know, going to be increasing the debt, if he's going to be bombing more countries, if he's going to be going along with the Federal Reserve, if he's going to be, you know, you know, just so many different things that he ran against. And again, I don't want to criticize him a ton because there's obviously a lot of good things he's doing as well. One of those good things was exiting the TPP. Now he's getting back into that. So, you know, a lot of stuff going on. This is only just like a real, you know, snippet of what's going on, but I think it was important to be able to get something out there about Syria. So I hope you guys, you know, are not perpetuating all these, you know, Syrian propaganda. You know, if you're listening to me, odds are you aren't. You know, really appreciate the listen and thank you very much. I hope you guys have a great weekend. Thank you.